Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimebold. And Jeff, we are well into the off-season now. I know you're just about to get deep into training camp with the BC Lions, but we're also starting to see some of these NFL teams trickle back onto the field.
Yeah, it's great to see. You know, there's still some teams that are in minicamp. And I think that for a lot of fans, this is the first chance to see their shiny new toys, if you want to call them that, the draft pick that they had. The coaches would get a chance to get their hands on the players again. And I know, you know, the coach, from a coach's standpoint, Neil, it's a long, frustrating offseason because the way that the NFL Players Association, the NFL same way, you just can't access your players like you used to during the offseason. And so for the coaches, this is a welcome opportunity to get back with your players and start coaching football.
Yeah, I know. Listening to Adam Gase talking last week, he was actually on the Pro Football Talk podcast, and he was saying that he's not allowed to even contact his players after midday in the off-season. So they're kind of biggest thing they're trying to teach some of these players is how to manage their time. Jeff, I know there's been a lot of news north of the border about somebody who's going to fill his time with some quarterback play, and that's Johnny Manziel. So 2 years he's going to be with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. First of all, I want to talk a little bit, Jeff, in a second. I want to tell a story about Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers and Johnny Manziel. But on the field, how do you think that Manziel could fare in the CFL?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to watch. You know, this is not without precedent, but I'm going to take you back a little bit. Vince Ferragamo, the last time, you know, the Los Angeles Rams were in the Super Bowl and they lost the game, but their quarterback was a guy named Vince Ferragamo. And Vince was an outstanding player, and Montreal at that time did a mega deal to bring him north of the border. And, he, you know, this is how it fared for him. He went from playing quarterback in the Super Bowl to his first game in the CFL, he threw 6 interceptions. It is a different game. It, you know, it's a wider field. The angles on the throws are different. There's another defensive player on the field. The motion, you know, all of it's different. So for Johnny, he's in a good situation in that he's not going to have to start right away. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, you talk about guys who have made the transition from CFL back to the NFL, Joe Theismann being one, and, you know, had a great career in Washington, Doug Flutie being another, you know, had a great career in Buffalo and San Diego. Warren Moon made that transition as a quarterback. Whether Johnny Manziel will do it or not remains to be seen. I'm always concerned when you have that guy who's had some of the off-field issues that he's had, you know, that his priorities remain, you know, in the right place.
Yeah, that's why I kind of wanted to talk to you about, Jeff, as well as we look at Johnny Manziel, because, as you know, every year I write a season preview magazine. I'm in the process of putting together the 2018 edition right now, and I reached out to the San Francisco 49ers a couple of weeks ago to ask about doing a feature interview with Jimmy Garoppolo as one of the big hot stars coming into 2018. And basically the 49ers told me, Jeff, that Jimmy G is not doing any one-on-one features, but I had quite a good relationship with them. So they said, look, we'll kind of meet you halfway. Jimmy's willing to do the interview as long as you write the story in a way where it reflects on the whole team. So the angle of the story must be about how well the entire team finished the 2017 campaign. It can't be all about Jimmy Garoppolo. Then Jimmy is happy to be interviewed and he's happy to be a part of the feature. So that's what I'm going to do with the 49ers. Then I look at Johnny Manziel, Jeff, announced that he's going to the CFL for 2 years with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And in the same press conference and within the same announcement, he's talking about a media partnership with Barstool Sports. And I'm just thinking, what are you doing? What are you doing at this specific time when it should be all about your football and you're trying to tell everyone, look, I still love playing, I still want it to be about this, and you make an announcement that about furthering your media career? I just thought it was ill-advised. What did you think of Johnny kind of making his announcements about heading to the CFL?
Well, first of all, I think that you know, I would like to give kudos to the San Francisco 49ers and to Garoppolo specifically for approaching that interview in that regard. You need, Neil, there's, you've been in enough locker rooms, you've dealt with enough NFL players. There's, you know, these are alpha males, and they're all they all ego-based guys. And so when one guy makes it all about him, and that typically happens with the quarterback because they get the most attention, that can create jealousy and envy and some of the things in the locker room that aren't healthy. And I really applaud the 49ers for, and I don't know how it happened, whether it was Jimmy G's idea or the 49ers' idea, and it's really irrelevant. But however they got to that place where he understands that it needs to be about the team and not about him, that is, to me, a really healthy sign in that organization. You know, it's created a response up here among some of the players on their social media pages where, you know, you can sense that the jealousy already because, Neil, for this league has been inundated, and Hamilton is going to have to hire, and this is, you know, in a press release that they did, they have so many media requests for him right now that they're going to go out and hire another media relations person just to handle the Manziel request, which have come from as far away as China. I know I've had people, you know, in Europe that I know who are in the media have asked me if I can get to him through June. And, you know, it's amazing. You would hope that those guys would understand it just brings more eyes to you to showcase your talent. But one of the DBs in the league said, you know, I can't wait to pick him off. And another, one of the other quarterbacks says, I don't care about Johnny Manziel. So you can sense that little, you know, jealousy and animosity in the players. And, you know, that's why a locker room and a team is such a fragile thing. When it becomes all about one guy, it can be problematic for your football team.
Well, we saw that when he entered the NFL, Jeff, when people were sacking him when he was playing for the Cleveland Browns. They're all giving the money sign, so everyone wants to stick it just to Johnny Manziel, and I'm sure it's going to be no different north of the border. One other piece of news I just wanted to touch on with you, Jeff, before we move on to our state of the franchise, which this week we're going to look at the Los Angeles Chargers, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Dallas Cowboys. Notable by their absence at the organized team activities in New England were Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, Jeff. It should be pointed out that these are voluntary. The first mandatory mini camps for the Patriots are June 5th to the 7th. Brady wants a new deal, reportedly. I mean, he's only due to be paid $14 million in 2018, which is ridiculous when you think of what some of the top quarterbacks in the NFL are getting. But, Jeff, this is notable because you can tell me it's voluntary, but Brady's always been there. So when he's not, I'm going to be a little bit concerned.
Well, you know, again, I know that there are a lot of conspiracy theorists out there that, you know, everybody's talking about the cracks in the wall and, you know, all the, you know, the stuff that's going on between the owner and the quarterback and the head coach and the offensive coordinator. But I agree with you, Neil. This is so non-New England and this is so non-Tom Brady. And I wonder, you know, if it's not just the accumulation of frustrations. You know, and again, anytime people work together, it can get, you know, there can be frustration. But a deeper frustration when he sees, you know, contract after contract being so big and so much guaranteed money, and here he is, the most successful quarterback of his time, and he's making $14 million compared to some of these guys who haven't done anything compared to what he's done. And, you know, got fully guaranteed contracts, and, you know, it's just crazy.
He's going to be there, isn't he, Jeff? I don't think there's any doubt about that. But again, it just is another sign that there are rumblings there. And when you've got rumblings in the off season, then you go into the pressure and intensity of the regular season, and then that all gets cranked up in the postseason. It's, you know, it's just like little cracks starting to appear in your wall, and then they get bigger and bigger. It feels like that in New England at the moment.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that, you know, that there's enough, And I'm always slow to, particularly when it comes to New England, because I think New England left out as much information as, you know, they want to let out. But, you know, this is now how many times, you know, in the last 6 months will we have heard stories of, you know, confrontation, of, you know, rivalries within inside the organization, who's in charge, you know, like things that you never heard from New England. Now, is it the beginning of the end? I don't believe so. But I think, it's not what you expect from that franchise. And I think it's, you know, I think it's gives us a plenty of things to talk about, certainly in the offseason. But, you know, again, there's got to be, if there's enough incidents, there's got to be some fact to it. There's got to be something in there that's not the way it's always been in New England.
How does it work, Jeff? Because Belichick won't tell us that when he gets up to the podium. How does it work? Does Brady's agent just ring the Patriots and say, just so you know, Tom's not coming? Or do they just find out when his locker's empty on the day because it's voluntary? I mean, you know, this is one of the things where sort of peeking behind the curtain's quite good for a fan to do, but we don't know the process of it necessarily.
Yeah, I think the thing that you know, depends on what kind of relationship they have, right? If his people... you know, want to make it confrontational, they don't say a word. He just doesn't show up.
It yeah.
kind of hits them, you know, from left field. If they're communicating and, you know, they say, you know, we want a deal done and Tom's willing to sit and wait and not be in minicamp. And so, you know, they're using it as a tool to, you know, to get the Patriots, you know, to come to the table. You know, it's so many things that can be involved in it, and it is a tender deal, because, you know, you can come in and say one wrong thing, and that starts a conversation that, you know, can unravel a whole bunch of goodwill. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that you, as a player, really want to just have your agent handle, and you've got to have the kind of relationship with your agent that you can go to him and say, listen, I want you to put the pressure on, but again, I have to go in there and work. Those are my teammates. That's a very, very, you know, that's the guy that I'm going to be around. I'm talking about Belichick and Josh Ben. I'm going to be around him every day for the next 7 months. So, you know, again, let's handle it in a, you know, in a positive way as opposed to an adversarial way.
Yeah, absolutely. So the key dates to look out for if you're a Patriots fan, June 5th to the 7th, those are the mandatory minicamps. If Tom and Gronk aren't at those, then you can borrow my panic button and you can beat the living daylights out of it. So let's move on to our state of the franchise then, and we're going to kick off with the Los Angeles Chargers. So they went 9-7 last year. Let's give you the tale of the tape on the Chargers. Offense was fourth in the NFL, more than 376 yards per game. They were 24th in rushing. They had the number one passing attack in the NFL with 276.9 yards per game. Defense was 15th, 31st against the rush. Not good enough defending the run. They were third against the pass, very good in the secondary. Jeff, they won 9 of their last 12. They had an 0-4 start. They just couldn't dig their way out of that in the end, just came up short. But when you look at, we've talked about this before, the Rams kind of winning the battle for Los Angeles and all the headlines that go around the Rams every offseason. Don't sleep on the Chargers, because here is a very, very talented team that could make some noise in the AFC this year, whereas the Rams are looking to do the same in the NFC. Your top line thoughts on the Chargers, because I think this team's in pretty good shape.
Well, I don't think you have to go any farther than John Elway's comments on Denver. In his mind, he thinks the Chargers are the team to beat in that division. Mm. Now, that's saying something, because there's some good football teams in that division and some outstanding players in that division. So I think this is a team that's really on the rise, Neil. Coach Lynn did an amazing job. You know what it's like in pro football when you go 0-for a month. You know, you go 0-for-4. Mm. It is really, really difficult. And you're a first-year head coach, and you're in that locker room, and you're trying to sell your team on your approach is the way to win, and you haven't had a positive result in a regular season game 4 weeks, 5 weeks into the season. That is a hard, hard deal. And for him to get that team righted and to win 9 out of 12, says an awful lot about him and his staff in a positive way. Mm. And I think when you watch that team being built, there is so much to like about it. And, you know, this defense, although they're not big enough and strong enough yet up front, is really a Gus Bradley defense.
Yep.
Look at how they're built. You know, they've got edge rushers. They went out and got a safety that should be a dynamic player for them. They've got corners that can play man-to-man. It is a very much like the defenses that he had in Seattle. And, you know, you got one of the best quarterbacks, one of the most competitive quarterbacks in the National Football League, in Philip Rivers, talent around him. They've made some strides in the offensive line. I think this is a good football team, but, you know, we don't maybe appreciate them as much as we should because, as you said, you know, the media darlings in Los Angeles certainly were the Rams last year.
Let's dig into a couple of the numbers then. Philip Rivers had 28 touchdown passes, 10 interceptions. He was a Pro Bowler once again. Towards the end of the season, Jeff, Melvin Gordon was... you look at Melvin Gordon's numbers. He was an 1,100-yard rusher. He had 8 touchdowns on the ground, 4 more and nearly 500 yards as a receiver. But towards the end of the season, this once again became Philip Rivers' team. And you look at Keenan Allen. He had a career year, 102 catches, nearly 1,400 yards. And you're right, they've upgraded that offensive line as well. So offensively... They were a top five, they were a top four offense last year. They should be the same again, shouldn't they, when you look at it?
Well, you know, you don't have Antonio Gates.
And again,
I think obviously he was a declining player, but, you know, he was a guy that in the red zone still was an effective guy for him. That'll be a little bit of a thing to watch to see how they're able to fill that gap. I really thought when Melvin Gordon came into the league, you know, you remember we were doing the draft, and I really thought he had a chance to be a great back. And he got put in an offense that just didn't fit. And now with what Lynn's brought to San Diego, he's in a much better position to use his skills. The thing that was interesting to me watching the Chargers last year was the last, I guess, 2 or 3 years prior, you'd see Philip, it was like he had to make every play himself. And in the end, too many interceptions, too many forced balls, you know, he cut his interception rate way down. And, you know, 28-10 ratio between touchdown passes and interceptions, that's what you're looking for. So obviously, what does that speak to? It speaks to better balance, better ability to run the ball, better pass protection up front, better defense. You're not playing from behind all the time. So, you know, those are all positive things because, again, Philip Rivers is now at the age where they need to, you know, I mean, if they're going to make another Super Bowl run, they need to do it now.
Yeah, they've missed the playoffs in 7 of the last 8 seasons, so they have wasted some of Rivers' best years, but they do appear to be on track now. On defense, Jeff, Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram combined last year for 23 sacks. Bosa had 12.5, Ingram had 10.5. Bosa, Jeff, has had 19 sacks in his first 20 NFL games. And you can talk about a player's get-off, you can talk about their hand placement, their moves. Jeff, let's talk about his motor, because it just seems like he just refuses to be blocked. And that's a thing as well, isn't it? A motor, it's not all about technique.
Yeah, you know, he has the ability to, in coaching, you know, language, we say play the play longer than your opponent.
Right.
He is relentless. He has, as you referred to, his motor never stops running. Now, you combine that with the size and strength and speed that he has, that's what you want in your great pass rusher. I also saw a statistic the other day, you know, that was really fascinating. He's also one of the most penalized players in the NFL, and not for, you know, late hits or those kinds of things, for offsides.
Okay.
He is one of those guys, much like Lawrence Taylor was, that's going to try and get that jump on that snap count. And they give him the freedom as a coaching staff when it's a long down situation. It's 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. Go ahead and try and jump the count, because if he's offside, it's a 5-yard penalty, and we'll come back to him. That's the kind of freedom that Gus gives those pass rushers. That's the way those guys, that's why Michael Bennett and those guys were so upfield, Cliff Avril in Seattle. That's the style that he wants to play, and Bosa fits it perfectly.
Good in the secondary as well, Jeff. You've got Casey Hayward there, Jason Verrett coming back as well. And as you mentioned, alluded to earlier, Derwin James as well can be, he's versatile, he's big, he's strong, he's everything you want, isn't he, in a safety?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's kind of a combination of the two safeties that they had in Seattle in their glory days, because he can cover the middle of the field and he's physical. He can drop down in the box and play a man front for you. He can cover in man-to-man. So for them to get him at the, where they drafted, they had to be shocked that he would fall to them. And obviously, he's a big, big cog, because if you're going to play that Seattle-style, Gus Bradley kind of single-high safety defense, you have to have a guy that can control basically from the numbers to the numbers in the middle of the field.
Jeff, if I can't get a season ticket to the Rams in Los Angeles and you force me to watch the Chargers, I'm perfectly happy. I'm absolutely happy to go and watch Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon, Philip Rivers. To me, this is an arrow up team. What about you?
I agree, no question about it. The sad thing, is, they play in a stadium where so few people can come watch them play. They're maybe the best kept secret in the NFL, just from an exposure standpoint. But when you talk to football people, everybody realizes this is a very, very good football team with on the rise football team, and I think with the way that division is shaking out, I'm not sure I'd take them as the number one pick in that division, but I think they have a chance to win that division.
Jeff, they're going to play in front of some very small crowds this year, but not in Week 7 when they pack out Wembley Stadium, because that'll be about four times what they're used to all season long.
Right. And what a great thing for, and we talk about this all the time, for the fans to see a guy like Philip Rivers live.
Yeah.
At a time in his career where he's still a relevant guy. He's still one of the elite quarterbacks. He's so much fun for me to watch. He's such a great competitor. He's so fiery. And people in Wembley are going to really be treated to, I think, a really, really fun game. And, a moment to watch a guy that I think will wear a gold jacket one day. And that's really a cool deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to our next team, who are also London-bound then. The Seattle Seahawks are heading to London to take on the Oakland Raiders at Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium. That's Week 6. The Seahawks went 9-7 last year, another winning season, but they didn't make the playoffs. Their offense was 15th in the NFL, 23rd in rushing, 14th in passing. They were 11th in total defense, 19th against the run, 6th against the pass. Jeff, we've talked ad infinitum about the players that they've lost this year, but it's worth reminding ourselves that Jimmy Graham is no longer there at tight end. Paul Richardson at wide receiver. Cliff Avril has retired. We've seen Michael Bennett traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. Richard Sherman is a San Francisco 49er. And we're still waiting to see about Cam Chancellor and whether he comes back from that serious neck injury. Earl Thomas is staying away from off-season workouts. There's been talk of a possible trade there. So there's your starting point. I guess my starting point is that Pete Carroll, early years, Jeff, he turned that roster over with John Schneider and he found some gems and he made them competitive. Feels like they're starting again, although coaches hate that word, rebuild.
Yep, and I think there's some things we got to talk about in this deal, because, the last two drafts that Seattle has had have not been good for them. When you look at, they've had enough selections that, you should be replenishing this football team. TJ Proces has been a good player for him, but he's still got some injury issues.
Yep.
Who else have they drafted recently that's been a big-time player for him? And that was one of Schneider's, calling cards was that he was good in the draft and he was good at assembling the team. I think this is an interesting thing. You've got a quarterback right now who's one of the, in my opinion, one of the better, I don't know if I'll put him in the elite category yet, but certainly Russell Wilson is an outstanding quarterback.
Yep.
He brings so much to you. He can create. He's grown as a thrower. This is really now one of the special guys in the league. I think what they're doing here, and I think this is a calculated decision by Pete Schneider. They looked at their football team. They knew they were getting old. They had to turn the roster over. You make this decision as a team. Do we kind of limp through with some older guys and just try and keep it afloat and maybe, get one more? Or are quarterbacks young enough? Do we turn it over now and try and make a run again where we're good for 3 or 4 years? I think it's a calculated decision by Schneider and Pete Carroll. Turn the roster over right now. Russell Wilson's young enough that, and we've got him under contract, we'll get better and, take a couple years to get there, but we'll get better and make another run at a Super Bowl. So I think that's where we're at right now with Seattle.
Yeah, it's flipped on its head, Jeff, because when Russell Wilson was on his rookie contract, they could pay Richard Sherman, they could pay Earl Thomas, they could pay Cam Chancellor. Now Russell's not, and you need to pay him like a franchise quarterback. Now you need your young players to step up. Rashad Penny at running back is one they're going to be looking to. Frank Clark was a first-round draft pick last year. Rasheem Green, a high draft pick this year. That's where they're going, isn't it? And let's dig into a few of the players, because I'm looking at the offense, Jeff. And I mean, I didn't know much about Penny, I must admit, around draft time. It wasn't a name that I heard linked with the first round very much, but when I look at the rest of the roster, I know Doug Baldwin, of course. Tyler Lockett has never really been a kind of number two receiver. You got Marcus Johnson from a trade with Philadelphia, but then tight end, is it Ed Dixon? Is it Nick Vannett? I mean, if they want to have this be a passing team, because we heard that kind of, we're moving away from the, the pound and ground bit of it, and we're going to go more towards Russell Wilson. I don't know if they've got the pieces around him, have they?
Well, look at what he did last year, and how much offense he really created by himself.
Yeah, he does.
How much was by design, and how much it was just Russell making plays. I mean, you remember the Jacksonville game?
Oh yeah,
that was unbelievable.
I doubt if they called an offensive play.
Yeah, I mean it was like snap it to Russell and just everybody, get
playground.
Out of the way.
Playground stuff.
Yeah. That's what it looked like. Now, here's what else I think, in Seattle. Pete turned over his staff, too.
Yes.
Now, he brought Penny Norton back, but, they changed offensively. I think they felt like they needed fresh ideas. They needed to really make this Russell Wilson's team. I think they found out that some of those experiments along the offensive line where they were taking defensive players and trying to make the offensive guys out of them. I think there's a new approach now happening offensively in Seattle. I was down at the mini camp. It was, as always is the case when you're around the Pete Carroll team, it was very spirited, it was very competitive, it was, it was interesting. They almost had to put a leash on Shaquille Griffin. I mean, that kid is a high energy fly around the field guy. I think Pete's rejuvenated. That's what I see. I think he's rejuvenated by the challenge. He's the oldest coach in the National Football League now, and it's kind of funny to think that the oldest coach in the National Football League is juiced up and rejuvenated again, but I think that's what's going on in Seattle. I think he embraces and loves the challenge of creating a new Seattle Seahawks. It's not going to be Cam Chancellor. It's not going to be Michael Bennett. It's not going to be Beast Mode. It's not going to be those guys. This is going to be a new Seattle. And I think that, gets Pete juiced up about getting up in the morning.
Jeff, I think you've hit on something really interesting there. We don't have to break down every player on the roster, but this is a good conversation to have about the team and a team dynamic, because we always hear about coaches having a shelf life, and their message maybe becomes old. And I don't think Seattle should ever be considering at the moment moving on from Pete Carroll. He's one of the top coaches in the NFL. So maybe he's energized by delivering the message to a new, younger group who haven't heard it as much. Because there was actually stories a couple of weeks ago that, and Pete Carroll denied it, but Michael Bennett was the one who put it out there. Michael saying that he was sitting reading a book in team meetings, openly disrespecting his coach, if that's the case. I don't know if that happened, but you got the impression, Jeff, that Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, they'd heard every Pete Carroll story that he had to tell. So maybe because they can't move on from Pete Carroll, maybe having some fresh people to hear that message for the first time is not a bad thing.
Well, you're right on a couple of fronts, particularly. John Madden made the comment that the head coach shouldn't be a head coach for longer than 5 years in the same place.
Right.
Because exactly what you're talking about. They can only hear the message so many times. And then the natural progression of what happens. You know, I've known Michael Bennett since he was 17 years old. And I can see that happening because, you know, Mike's a strong individual. Mm. Richard Sherman is a strong individual. Those guys, especially when they come in as rookies and they're young players, it's one thing. But if they play through the league and they figure out the way the league works and they get affected by the business of the business, they can be hardened a little bit. And they can, you know, they're not as receptive to the message as they were as young players. So sometimes it's time to move away from them. Now, I know in my personal situation, you know, right now, I'm going through the very same thing. 5 years in one place, loved it. Come to a new place and see all new faces and new guys, and they're hearing the message for the first time. And it does rejuvenate you. It does, you know, make it more fun. And I think for the players, same thing. Whether it's Richard Sherman in San Francisco or Michael Bennett in Philadelphia or Pete Carroll in Seattle, I think this can be a positive for every single guy involved in the deal.
Jeff, you're rejuvenated, and let me just tell you, you look good in orange on the practice field, mate. Sets you off lovely.
I look good in the sunshine compared to the cold. I saw a picture of Hamilton's practice yesterday, and it looked like it was about 40 degrees, and I said, God almighty, I'm glad I'm not doing that again.
There you go. Let me just check in on the defense, Jeff. We won't go through every player, but Bobby Wagner said this week, don't sleep on our defense. They've still got Wagner, they've got KJ Wright, but for me, there's so many question marks with this unit. Are you worried about their defense?
I'm not so much worried about them. And, you know, again, I think the thing that what can be happening in Seattle, and, you know, you've watched this happen with football teams, when it was all about Richard Sherman and it was all about Michael Bennett and it was all about Cliff Avril. And then, you know, those other guys, they think they're pretty good too. I mean, you know, so now that those guys are cleared out of there, it gives those younger guys, those newer guys, those maybe underappreciated guys when all those strong personalities were there, an opportunity to, you know, kind of step out and get love too. And I think that's a positive. Mm. They've got a plan up there. I'm just telling you, they've got a plan up there. They know what they want. They know the kind of players that they want. Now, they have, like I said, I don't think they've drafted particularly well for a couple of years. And I agree with you. I think Penny was a reach, you know, for them. Mm-hmm. But they did trade down to get some picks. I think the defensive lineman that you talked about, Green, the kid out of USC, I think that's a positive pick for them because they need one of those kinds of guys. Did they get enough? I don't know. I mean, if I was grading their draft, I'd probably say C. But I still think that this is the Seahawks, and they will be a factor in that division.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they know what they're doing. They're turning the roster while the quarterback's young enough, and so that when these young kids mature, Russell will still be at the height of his career.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. I think I would give them an arrow down because they lost too much in one off season. There's still some big question marks around this team. But if you're expecting them to go 5-11 or 6-10, and you're not a fan of the Seahawks, you're going to be disappointed. Pete Carroll doesn't turn out teams that way, and Russell Wilson is too good to have a 10 or 11 lost season, Jeff. This is the team that's not going to go away quietly.
I agree with you. As long as he stays healthy, this team will be competitive in every single game that they play. And I think that those people out there that are, you know, saying that this is, as you said, you know, 4-12 team, I think they have to shake themselves a little bit. As long as Russell Wilson's playing, they got a chance.
All right, let's move on to the final team on our State of the Franchise this week, and it's America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. They also went 9-7 in 2017. It's back-to-back winning seasons for Jason Garrett as a head coach, but the Cowboys have missed the playoffs for the fifth time in the last 7 years under Garrett. Here's the numbers. 14th in total offense. Rushing attack was second in the NFL, 135.6 yards per game. Passing attack dropped to 26th, though Dak Prescott took a step back at quarterback. Total defense was 8th. They were 8th against the run, 11th against the pass. Jeff, before we get into some of the players, because there's so much to chew on with the Cowboys, Dak Prescott taking a step back potentially, Ezekiel Elliott returning for a full season, hopefully in 2018, no Dez Bryant. Before we get to all of that, let's talk about the coaches here, because you've got Jason Garrett, head coach. Scott Linehan is still their offensive coordinator, and Rod Marinelli, a defensive coordinator. Jeff, one of the big things leveled at the Cowboys is that some of their schemes are quite simple and quite vanilla. Is that true from a coach's eye?
We could have a special edition two-hour Cowboys show. I'm telling you, so much. There's so much to talk about. You know, I think it might be by design. I really think Jerry just wants to... I mean, if you ask him about anything, you're going to get an answer that's something you can chew on and speculate about. And, but, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've read some stuff, and I've heard people say, well, they're a poorly coached football team. I don't believe that.
No.
Are they simple in some of the things that they do? Yes, defensively they are. But hold on a second now. We just talked about a team in Seattle that has been in the Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl, and they played probably two coverages in the back end and maybe three fronts up front and didn't blitz. And, you know, they were as simple as anybody I've ever seen. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's kind of a double-edged sword. If you say you're going to be simple, your players can play fast because they don't have to think about a lot of things. That was always Tony Dungy's mantra in Tampa Bay. He said to me once, we were down at training camp in NFL Europe, we used their facility, and Tony came out and talked on the practice field one day, and we were talking about his Tampa 2 defense. He said, Jeff, if you can count to 4, you can play in our defense because everything was basic. And it was serious. He was being serious. Like, no, Tony Dungy's not a guy that's going to, you know, crack a lot of jokes when you talk to him, right? So, but what he was saying was everything was based upon numbers. That's number one, that's number two, that's number three, that's number four. Your pass drop per se is inside of 2, inside of 3, inside of 4. You know, it was very, very simple. Very simple. And not a lot of checks and not a lot of, you know, compare it to what, you know, Rex Ryan runs or Bill Belichick runs, or, you know, I mean, there's a million checks and everybody's got to be formation aware. One guy moves, 4 different adjustments have to happen on defense. So it's a style that they're comfortable with. I don't think it's a schematic issue with the Cowboys. I really don't. Mm. I think that where the problems exist with the Cowboys, if you say that they're problems, and one of the reasons why they haven't been back to the playoffs, one of the reasons why they haven't won Super Bowls, is all of the drama that continuously swirls around that football.
Well, let's have a look at some of that drama then, and it's continued. Last year we saw Ezekiel Elliott, of course. Will he play? Won't he play? The whole legal problems for the domestic violence case that lingered all year long. But this year already, Jeff, we've seen the Cowboys move on from Dez Bryant. They cut Dez Bryant, and then they lose Jason Witten to retirement. So as we start to look at this offense, there are a couple of big pieces out of the offense, especially Witten as a comfort blanket for Dak Prescott. And Prescott's numbers, Jeff, were quite jarring last year. So in 2016 as a rookie, of course, Ezekiel Elliott was firing on all cylinders at that time. Dak threw 23 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Last year, 22 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Lost a little bit of that poise under pressure. Of course, Tyron Smith was out for a while, injured at left tackle. There's lots of questions there in terms of who replaces Dez Bryant and Jason Witten, because when you look at the receivers left on the roster, you know, a few of them have kind of had spurts of doing things. We know Cole Beasley's very, very consistent, but Alan Hearns, Deontay Thompson, Terrence Williams, Tavon Austin, they've all kind of had brief spurts, but not much consistency.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at Cole's a guy who's got a role. He's not a number one receiver. He's a great slot receiver. He does certain things extremely well. But what they don't have, and what I think they didn't have last year because of Dez's decline, you know, and again, you know, we talked about this on another show. It wasn't like he wasn't targeted. He was one of the most targeted players in the league.
Yeah.
But the reality of it, his play had declined.
Couldn't separate.
You know, they don't have a guy right now that when that quarterback gets in a long down situation, that he can know that he's got a one-on-one matchup that he can win. There's not that guy right now. Now, if you get into a manageable situation and it's play action and you want to run an option route, you've got a guy in Cole Beasley who's going to do that very, very well. But he's not going to take the top off the coverage. He's not going to beat a guy on a dig route or a post route or a corner route very many times. So you've got to have that outside guy that's the number one. And I agree with you, Neil. I don't see a consistent guy out there. And interestingly enough, I didn't think that the Cowboys, you know, everything I had heard was that the Cowboys really wanted Cortland Sutton. That's the guy that they had targeted to take that spot from Dez.
Yeah.
The big kid out of SMU. Well, you know, that's what makes me wonder about this where they're going. You know, this is always what I'm thinking about the Cowboys. What is the plan, right? What is the plan, right? And, you know, they cut Dez. Well, you got to have a plan because he's the only guy that you got that
can win a job.
Exactly. And then you go take and Van Der Esch is a great player. I have the potential to be a good player. He's got injury history, and you're at a position. Everybody talks about their three linebackers that will be such great players. Well, the reality of it is you're in nickel so much in the NFL now.
You only got two.
You can't leave three linebackers on the field
when
everybody's playing three and four wide receivers. So why a linebacker?
Yeah.
Linebacker, again, to me it was a head-scratcher.
Jeff, we'll get to the linebackers in a second because there's a trio right there that Leighton Van Der Esch, as you said, concerns over neck injury and, you know, spinal cord potentially. Sean Lee is on in and out of the lineup, and then you've got Jalen Smith who's finally got the protective boot off of his foot, you know, because of the drop foot issue. But just one more thing on offense, Jeff. I'm looking at the so I use Our Lads, which is the kind of most up-to-date depth charts in the NFL. And they've got, for the wide receivers, they've got Deontay Thompson and Terrence Williams starting on the outside. And then the slot receiver is Tavon Austin. And then running with the twos is Cole Beasley. If your mate Cole Beasley saw this depth chart right now, he'd stick his boot right through my laptop. How the heck is Tavon Austin penciled in as the slot starting receiver? That's not happening, surely.
Well, this is the Cowboys now.
Could be.
So we'll see. But, you know, I know it's got to be frustrating if, you know, because again, players see that stuff, right? You know, this has got to be frustrating for him because, you know, Tavon Austin, when he came into the league, everybody had high hopes for him. But, you know, you don't get rid of a guy who can have the physical tools that he has unless there's some hole in him. And he's never been able to, you know, be that guy, that dynamic guy that they thought he would be. And here, you know, here's Cole, undrafted free agent. All he does is make plays for him. And, you know, I'm afraid, to be honest with you, Neil, I thought when they kept Switzer last year, I thought, uh-oh. You know, because younger, cheaper, right?
Well, Jeff, there's certain players, Jeff, around the NFL, and undrafted free agents are often those players. They love you, but they're always looking to replace you. And maybe that's what exactly. Cole is.
Yeah, I think that may be the case. But I know Cole deeply enough to know that if he's going to go down, he ain't going down without a fight. And, you know, he's, in my mind, if you just look at production, him versus Davon Austin, it's not even close.
No, not.
But again, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's one of those we'll see deals. And so many times it's that way with the Cowboys. Because, you know, like, let's go back to the defensive thing.
Yeah.
You know, I understand Sean Lee's hurt a lot, right? But there was an NFL team, you know, and I know Fatal Van Der Esch would not have drafted him because of his neck.
Mm.
Now, they completely said no. Now, that doesn't mean he can't play, but Van Der Esch also, you look how he really was a one-year wonder at Boise State. And he plays out of control sometimes. He's a good football player. I'm not saying he's not, but he's got a serious, you know, injury question. And he doesn't have a lot of great football background behind him. He played eight-man football in high school.
Yeah.
So, and played at Boise State. So he's a little bit of a reach to me. And you know, at that point in the draft, certainly there had to be a receiver that could help you. And I think that's where they need help. And then they go out and take Connor Williams in the second, with the second pick out of Texas at a position where it's not really a need position for the Cowboys because their offensive line is still good.
Yeah.
And when you look at that one, what's he going to be? He's got really short arms, and, you know, can he play tackle? I don't know. He doesn't fit the dimensions, and he's under strength to be a guard inside where the big guys play. So I don't know what's he going to be, a backup for you?
Just a backup, one of those backups who can play all along the line.
And that's all good, but not with that pick.
No.
When you've got as big a need as they've got. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out now. If I'm a big Jason Garrett fan, I like him very much, and I believe Rod Marinelli is a good football coach, and, you know, but I just don't know. I don't know. They just don't seem to have a plan to be.
No. Jeff, you know, I was just looking down their depth chart, and I agree with you on Van Der Esch. I think, you know, you're in nickel about 60% of the time in the NFL. So does linebacker really make you a winner in the NFL? It's kind of about, you know, loading up with corners and offensive tackles and pass rushers. I'm looking at the defense, Jeff, and, you know, they've got some players on that side of the ball, DeMarcus Lawrence, David Irving, but you always say it's not about collecting football cards, but I'm looking down the depth chart and they've taken some names who are a bit of a risk that, you know, they've taken a punt on Coney Ealy, who was, of course, that big performer in Super Bowl 50, but he didn't do much else. You go further down the depth chart, you've got Dayton Jones, who was a first-round pick for the Packers a few years back. So, you know, Jerry's collecting some football cards there.
Yeah, and you know, you think about Coney Ealy, and like you say, you know, that one game in the Super Bowl has made him millions and millions of dollars. But how many teams has he played for since that game?
Well, yeah, he was at the Patriots, wasn't he? And then Jets.
And then they got rid of him.
Yeah.
And then the next team got rid of him. And now this is his third team since that big game. What was that, 2 years ago?
That was Super Bowl 50, yeah, so 2 years ago.
Yeah. So it's a... Hey, listen, they're not all dumb. You know what I mean? I'm talking about personnel guys.
Yeah.
If the guy's been cut that many times, There's something there. So again, like you say, if I was a Cowboy fan, I would be extremely frustrated. I mean, extremely frustrated. Because, you know, you lose Jason Witten. You don't just lose a good, a red zone threat, an intermediate route guy, yada, yada, yada. You lose a ton of leadership. You lose a tremendous voice in your locker room. You lose a guy that the young kids, you know, that you hope the young kids watch. Now, who's going to take that role? Much less the tight end position.
Yeah. Jeff,
who's going to take that leadership role on offense?
Do you remember a couple of years ago when Dez went off in the locker room and we said there was that great image of Jason Garrett kind of peering around the corner, kind of looking and almost raising his eyebrows that Dez was going off, but it wasn't Jason Garrett who pulled Dez away from the media. It was Witten who did that. And you know, he was a class act on and off the field. He was a voice of reason in the locker room, a great link between the players and coaches. He's the main reason for me, Jeff, I'm giving this team a slight arrow down, because it's hard to completely write off a team with Dak Prescott, best offensive line in the NFL, Ezekiel Elliott, but you know, I think they're going to miss some pieces, and they're going to miss a lot of those, what you coaches call intangibles, without Witten. So again, I don't think this team is going away, but I think they take a slight step back. What do you think?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing to watch, because you talk about addition by subtraction. I really believe that when they cut Dez, it was a positive move for them. Mm. I think it was a positive move for the locker room. I think there were some, you know, some good things about it for them as a football team. And I'm not hating on Dez. I'm just saying that the distraction and all of the stuff that he brought, when his production numbers went down, that was too much to put up with. Now, you lose Witten, that's tough. More tough, I think, from the leadership standpoint than the player standpoint. But what really makes me wonder about the Cowboys is I don't see them addressing the issues, right? I don't see them addressing the issues. And this is a team that historically has shot itself in the foot. Shot itself in the foot with Greg Hardy, shot itself in the foot with the whole circus around Ezekiel Elliott's suspension. You know, they make it tough on themselves.
Well, Jeff, just on that, because they are America's team and they're the most talked about team in football, but they also kind of have a lofty status that their silverware doesn't actually back up at the moment. It's been 22 long seasons since they've won a Vince Lombardi trophy.
Well, I agree with you, Neil. They're America's team because of what Tom Landry and Jimmy Johnson built. Mm. Not what, you know, Dave Campbell inherited and, you know,
right.
Wade Phillips. You know,
there's
been a lot of dry years in Cowboy Land. And, you know, they've got the beautiful stadium and they've got the iconic star on their helmet and all of the mystique. But in the reality of the situation, they have not gotten it done for a long time. A long time. And there has to be a reason for that. Mm. And, you know, this is harsh, but to me, in Dallas, it's leadership from the top.
Good stuff, Jeff. Let's take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag to finish off. And we knew we'd get one like this, Jeff. So time for you to spill the X's and O's. This question comes from Jim Neal, who says, how is Jeff going to game plan for Johnny Manziel next season?
Well, you know, I think the thing that's going to be really interesting to see is how quickly he's able to pick up the Canadian game. You know, the guy I worked for won more games in this league than anybody. He played in the league for Marv Levy in Montreal. So he's seen a bunch of them come and go. And his belief is that the angles in the game, the way the game is played here, is almost backwards from the way most quarterbacks are trained in the game.
Right.
And so normally takes a, there normally is a period. For example, take Doug, right? Doug King.
Yep.
Doug came up here from the NFL, and the first year, he really struggled. And I sat in a meeting. He was our quarterback in BC at the time. I sat in a meeting, and the head coach said to the offensive coordinator, do you think the little guy is good enough to help us win? I remember that quote. Do you think the little guy is good enough to help us win? Because based on his first year, a lot of interceptions, you know, you could see flashes of Doug's, you know, of athletic ability, but he was not a great quarterback the first year. The second year, he threw for 6,200 yards, more yards than ever, and just that's still a pro football record. And, you know, he took off and then eventually went down to Buffalo and San Diego and finished his career. What I'm saying to you is, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how well Manziel can process what he sees up here. Now, one of the players in the league, another cornerback in the league, said, Johnny's going to find out just how good this league is. And if he comes in here with the idea that he's just going to, you know, dominate and, you know, make it look like he did at Texas A&M, I think he's got another thought coming. If he's humble and he listens to what his coach tells him, who understands quarterback play and coach some of the best that ever played, I think the kid's got a chance. But we'll see.
I just want to see him play football, Jeff, and just concentrate on football. He came out a couple of weeks ago and said, well, the Browns knew what they were getting. I was never an X's and O's guy. I was never that guy who was going to put in a lot of work. And here he is heading to the CFL, and he's talking about his media partnership with Barstool Sports. And you've just alluded to the subtle differences, and not all that subtle, some of the major differences in the game between the NFL and the CFL. I mean, you know, for a start, he's got one less down to gain 10 yards for a start. He's got one more defender to deal with. So I just want to see him shut up and put up, because, you know, I've been a critic of his ever since he kind of came out of the NFL and was giving the money signs. And it's not that I hate him. I don't like people that were acting like they're the second coming of Joe Montana before they've done anything on the field. And, you know, he should have been humbled by now. He should have realized that, you know, he's got to go back to square one and make it all about football. And I still don't know if he is. I hope he does, and I'd love to be proven wrong, but I'm going to have to be proven wrong now.
I agree. I think we're all anxious to see him play, and I think we're all anxious to see him just play football and not be Johnny Football.
Right.
Be Johnny Manziel. Be, you know, the starting quarterback for the Hamilton Tiger if he can win that job. And then, I'm always a believer, Neil, and I always pull for guys to resurrect their career and get their life back in order and all that other stuff. When I talked to June about it the other day, I said to June, hey, all the football stuff's great. You know, I hope he succeeds. But beyond that, I hope the kid figures out, you know, how to handle people, how to handle himself and get his life back in order. That's the most important thing. And if he succeeds on the football field, that's great. But I think the guy's got to grow up. I think he's got to, understand, how you treat people. Mm-hmm. I think he's, there's a lot of things he's got to do, in my mind, to be the success story that I think, he can be. And, I hope along the way, he has been humbled now. And, I'm going to tell you something. One of the ways our league's different, Neil, is they don't have celebration rules in this league, per se. You can't make a, obscene gesture. You can't make a throat slasher. But beyond that, they want the kids to celebrate. It's much more than the National Football League. So if you imagine the defenders when they sack him, if they make money signs in the NFL, wait and see what you're going to get out of this league. So, I think he's going to learn real fast that, that this is the league too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, wise words to end on there, Jeff. I know we're going to let you get off to practice. You're in training camp with the BC Lions at the moment. You just spent the last hour sipping your caramel macchiato with a little bit of whipped cream on top, I'm sure.
Hey, wait a second. Wait a that sounds like your order.
Yeah, there you go. What was my one? So last year I was in, I remember being coming back from an NFL UK live down in Cardiff. And I was in a motorway service station in one of these big chains. I won't mention which one. And I stood there and ordered my drink with Dallas Clark. And I ordered a skinny flat white. And he just said, did you just order a drink or describe yourself? So, yeah. I know you are.
I remember that he said, I remember Dallas said to the lady, he said, hey, give me a Neil Reynolds suit.
There you go. Both have one of them. But I know yours is... nothing to mix in with that caffeine, just pure caffeine. Good stuff, Jeff. Enjoy practice. Hope it all goes well. We'll speak to you next week for more Inside the Huddle.
All right, man. It's great talking to you. I enjoyed it as always. Aloha.